The announcement of the imposition of China's so-called security law is confirmation that they will take over all of Hong Kong's institutions and it will be the end of Hong Kong as we know it. All the words dating back to even earlier than the British-China negotiations in 1984 have proved to be meaningless, a sop to the gullible West. They're going to take Hong Kong by force if necessary. I asked Dr. Graham Smith, a fellow from ANU's Department of Public Affairs, how many refugees we might be getting from Hong Kong.
We have seen a real uptick in refugee applications. And as you can imagine, Hong Kong, being a wealthier place in Australia, is not somewhere we generally get refugee applications from. But I think they'll mostly be in a different visa class.
There's still a lot of people that have ties with Hong Kong that are ethnic Chinese, though, aren't there?
There's a huge number of people, Australian citizens. I think it's 100,000 Australian citizens currently in Hong Kong. So direct ties are there, and we have a very big Hong Kong community here in Australia.
Just walk us through what's happened with the changes in the laws. It sounds like it's the end of Hong Kong as we know it. Is that your assessment?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. It's a huge change. I mean, it's almost the biggest change since 1842 in terms of the sovereignty of Hong Kong. It really now is, at the discretion of the Chinese Communist Party, who goes to jail and who doesn't. So it's a massive change. The laws themselves cover four basic crimes, all of which are very loosely defined. So secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces. So these can all be stretched to mean practically anything, particularly the last one. So even someone talking to me and me saying something negative about Hong Kong, is that collusion with foreign forces? It's very arbitrary, it seems.
Well, I think that's a point that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was making, wasn't it? That it really is the Monroe Doctrine of China.
Yeah, and it has a very interesting clause that surprised a few people. It's extraterritorial. If you stretch it, possibly what I'm doing right now is also against the national security law. And should I, decide to transit through Hong Kong, maybe someone might pull me aside and have a little word. That was, I think, one surprise in the legislation. I don't think there were too many other surprises. Otherwise, it's pretty well as grim as everyone had expected.
Do you think perhaps that might have been directed at Taiwan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Taiwan is front and centre of this. So this is an extremely bold red line that's now been drawn as far as the sovereignty of Hong Kong goes. And next on the agenda is the reunification. People have, I think, given up on peaceful reunification. No one's really talking about that in Taiwan anymore. But yes, it's a very strong message to Taiwan.
I noticed that the US sailed a couple of warships through the straits there between Taiwan and China during the commemoration of Tiananmen Square. Did they have a bit of a pre-warning of this, do you think?
Look, all of these things are, I think, generally known about in advance so that, things don't go wrong and we don't have a horrible accident in the Straits. So I do think there would have been forewarning of that. Militaries aren't quite that reckless these days.
Is the UK going to take the lead in taking people from Hong Kong, or do you think we'll end up getting quite a lot of people?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Australia's come to this a little bit slowly, and I think in some ways because the UK has said to us, look, there could be a lot of people applying. It's 2.9 million people have a category of visa called British National Overseas or BNO passport. And in theory, under Boris Johnson, what Boris Johnson has said is they have a pathway to British citizenship. Now, it's unlikely that all of those people will take them up. But given we're in a downturn, I think Dominic Raab turned to us and said, look, you might be required to help out here.
Business in Hong Kong's had a pretty rocky run for at least the past year. How is this going to affect business in Hong Kong?
Look, I mean, the people who are in favour of the legislation are saying this is just what we need. We've had turmoil for the last year or so, rioting in the streets, etc., and this will provide a bit of certainty to business. But the nature of this law is such that it really does limit what companies can do and what companies' employees can do. Because we've had targeting of, for example, the employees of Cathay Pacific who took part in the demonstrations. So from a corporate point of view, the drop in the stock exchange as soon as this was announced was a fairly clear signal that not everyone in the business community is sold that this is a good package.
So the agreement that was made, one country, two systems, the basic law, the 50 years of serene sailing towards complete integration with the Chinese nation, that's all been laid a bit bare, hasn't it? Really, it was all a lie.
Well, I mean, the way China explains it now is that the agreement was negotiated at the time from a position of weakness, and that China is no longer in a position of weakness, so it won't be abiding by the agreement, which is quite extraordinary. Up till now, they'd sort of stuck by the rhetoric. And if you look at some of the rhetoric of Deng Xiaoping back in the day, he saw it in a very different way, or at least sold it in a very different way, to say, you know, if 50 years passes and China hasn't moved towards democracy, then we'll wait another 50 years. So the idea was that China would catch up with Hong Kong rather than Hong Kong becoming China.
But doesn't that sort of mean that don't worry about what we say in any agreement, just count how many guns we have?
Yeah, so this is really a key point, is it undermines China's credibility in international agreements. You know, whether they say, look, we were a different China back then, people will say, well, look, it's still the same People's Republic of China. It's still the same Communist Party. You should be sticking by your agreement. And they were initially arguing that they had, but now, you know, that's dropped away in the last few days.
And we've seen skirmishes on the Chinese-Indian border, the uptick in rhetoric against Taiwan. The South China Sea, again, has been bubbling away in every now and again in headlines. Is this all really a plan that China has in place?
Look, I don't know that you would call it a plan. I think you'd just call it a much more assertive and aggressive China under Xi Jinping. Certainly the government of Xi Jinping is doing things that the previous government would never have considered entering into. And the number of countries that China's had a falling out with, I mean, we see ourselves as doing pretty poorly, but, you know, if you compare us to the US or to Canada or even to India, as you said, you know, we're actually bubbling along not too badly. And it's, you know, this is a very interesting situation, because China talks about the complexity and the risks of the international situation, but at the same time adds to the complexity and the risk of the international situation. So it's a, you know, it's hard to work out exactly what they're doing. It doesn't seem to be a great plan.
Well, it sounds like we just should forget what they're saying and just look at the guns.
Well, that seems to be what you know, our government announced the other day. So
yeah. And just from the announcement the other day, do you think that the hardware that we're looking at getting and the changes to our airfield in Northern Territory is going to make any difference?
China itself, Zhao Lijian, the rather bullish spokesman for their foreign ministry, took it in his stride, surprisingly. He didn't have anything particularly negative to say about it. And I think he understands that this has been in the planning for a while. But yes, certainly it's a signal both that we need to look after ourselves and that we can't rely on America anymore. And I think in that respect, it's probably a realistic approach.
Dr. Graeme Smith, Fellow, Department of Pacific Affairs and the Coral Bell School of Asia Pacific Affairs at the Australian National University, speaking with me there. And I'm Roderick Chambers, and you're listening to On the Money throughout Australia on the Community Radio Network.